Hello, my name is Susie DeJong, speaker, coach, and author of The Untangling. And this is the Untangling series podcast, where we untangle our own unseen and unspoken chains that bind us to open up the way for us to experience more joy and peace and healing than we ever thought possible. So come and join me. Put on your comfiest clothes, grab a cup of something hot, or maybe even a glass of something bubbly. Put your feet up and let the untangling begin. Hello and welcome back to the next episode of the Untangling podcast. I honestly can't believe the people that I have had the honour of crossing paths with in my life. And today's guest is no exception. Jessica Lee is a delightful soul who I know that the listeners will also find as endearing as I do. I met Jess some years back when we both were in a coaching program for public speaking. Jess's journey up to and following that meeting is one that I know many people out there will relate to. Growing up academically minded and also being a high achiever, Jess was on her path to fulfilling her life goal of working in the corporate world. She had just finished her studies, an honours degree, and landed her dream job with the government in Canberra, when her life unexpectedly changed forever in a way she had never envisaged. Jess found herself becoming very unwell, and what started out simply as a bout of glandular fever progressed onto her being diagnosed with CFS, or chronic fatigue syndrome. As Jess shares with me, dealing with chronic fatigue was life-changing for her, altering the trajectory of the life she had envisaged to one of success in her career, to some days being unable to get out of bed or even walk. She shares with me her struggles, not only with her health, but by the attitudes and judgment of others of her dealing with this invisible illness. The chronic fatigue also brought along with it another uninvited and unwelcome guest for Jess, crippling high anxiety that she had never experienced before. Through the process of seeking help for both her physical and mental health, Jess was lucky enough to meet a health professional who helped her understand the role of our brains in illness and also in wellness. This sparked something in Jess and became another avenue for her learning in trying to heal herself. Like many others I've interviewed, Jess also wanted to share what she had learnt with others in the hopes that it might also bring them some healing too. She has done this by writing many articles for publications such as Wellbeing Magazine, working as a coach in business, and has also been great research for her upcoming book. Jess has been so vulnerable with me, and I have to say I'm really proud of her bravery and generosity in speaking with me about her journey. Regardless of who we are, we all have these common threads that bind us together. This is Jess's story. Hi, everybody, and welcome back to the Untangling podcast. I'm so thrilled to have you here with me again today. And as always, I have a wonderful guest who I can't wait to introduce you to. And the reason that I pick out these people to interview and share their stories is that I know that there is a lot of wisdom out there, and also that there will be people who listen to these stories and go, oh my gosh, that could be me. And they get a lot of support from this. So today I have a beautiful woman with me by the name of Jessica Lee. And Jess and I met, we think about 6 or so years ago, when we were both doing coaching in public speaking by a lovely lady called Laura Henschel down in Sydney. And I've been following Jess through that time, and I just sat there and thought, I really want to talk to her. And so we connected a few weeks ago and had a bit of a chat, and things have changed a little bit for her since we met. She's had a beautiful baby. Well, he's not a baby anymore. He's nearly six. And she's also gone through a few different challenges. And we're going to talk about that today. And I know this is going to be wonderful. So thank you so much for joining me today, Jess.
Well, thank you. It's a real pleasure to be here. Can't wait to get into it.
Oh, well, let's get into it.
Let's get into it.
So the two things that I really feel will be of benefit to people is one, sharing your own personal health journey, and also the work and the writing that you do in regard to, I don't know, what do we call it? Neuroplasticity, neuroscience, and the way that our brain can support us and how we can train it to support us to find better well-being and take care of ourselves. So tell me, when did you first get interested in this topic of neuroscience and neuroplasticity? How did that come about?
Yeah, I've always been interested in psychology since I was very young. I'd often get books out, Dr. Phil, Oprah, all that sort of personal development stuff. But for me, the brain stuff came in 2007, I did an honors degree and I got glandular fever in that year and I was pushing myself exceptionally hard. And when I finished that year, I went to work for the federal government down in Canberra. So I moved from Sydney and I was just really, really unwell. And I picked up a cold or a flu and just could not function. And I was, long story short, was diagnosed with chronic fatigue syndrome. And I had to leave my job, move back in with my mum back home. I was very, very unwell, like couldn't stand up long enough to have a shower. Very, very limited in what I could do. And going through the experience of everything in your world disappearing, like quite quickly, it shook me a bit, as I'm sure you could imagine. And also the uncertainty. Back then, chronic fatigue syndrome was still a little bit under that yuppie flu type of mentality. Doctors were saying you're just depressed. It was a struggle. I had people telling me it was in my mind, not in my body. And what that experience did was it actually made me quite anxious, is that I got scared about getting sick again. I got scared about doing a lot of things. I became very anxious just generally across every part of my world. I was scared about doing anything in case it made me worse. And I saw a few psychologists who very much focused on, how we can think positively and all of that stuff, which was useful, but it didn't quite help me with the anxiety. And then I met a wonderful psychologist who introduced me to the brain. Now, I'm very much a person, my brain works that if I understand something, the why and the how, I'm much better at actually being able to get a grasp on it, use it, and actually, move forward. And she said, look, I'm going to talk to you about your brain and how it works. Here are the parts, the amygdala, the prefrontal cortex. This is what happens when we get anxious. This is how we can train our brain to feel differently. Because up to that point, I had fully trusted my brain, my intelligence and was the thing that I sort of used to get through my life. I was very proud of the things I'd achieved. So my brain was like my, my strong point. So to find out that my brain was actually misfiring a little bit was actually really interesting for me to go, oh, all my thoughts are not necessarily ones that I should trust. Sometimes they need a little bit of critical thinking. So that really set me on a very different path, and understanding the neuroscience of anxiety and how we can rewire through changing our thoughts, changing our behaviors. It saved my life. Like it changed my life. It saved my life because I had, I was struggling, really struggling. So then I just became so passionate to understand more about the brain, and not just understand it, but share it. Because I'd been writing for wellbeing magazines before that, sharing my journey of chronic illness. So then I was able to layer it on top with stuff around the brain, because I thought if this could have such an impact in my life, there's other people out there who are like me. If they have this knowledge, it'll unlock something for them and they'll be able to create that change in their life, get more control over their life, feel more hope. And for me, the neuroscience also helped me be kinder, because when I was anxious, I thought there's something wrong with me. But when I realized, no, this is what our brains do, I could be so much kinder to myself and go, okay, that's all right. It's just my brain doing its thing. And I just have to go and do something different with these strategies that my psychologist helped me with. So, yeah, and I have just haven't lost my passion for learning about the brain. I mean, there's so much we know and there's so much we don't know. So it's probably a lifelong journey, I think.
And, you know, anxiety is a huge thing. We talked a little bit about it before. And unless you've really gone through it and experienced it, it's very hard for people who, you know, don't to understand it. But can you tell me how that actually was affecting you?
Oh, I think I just saw all the worst case scenarios as being very, very likely to happen. And I've come to appreciate as well, as I understand more about chronic fatigue syndrome and issues where the immune system is involved, is that the immune system is hyper alert in these conditions. It's like you're fighting this virus all the time. So you're in survival mode. When we're in survival mode, the fear center of our brain, the amygdala, is more sensitive. So it does actually see the world in a more fear, risk, that way. It's actually like a biological thing. But then, of course, you've got all the psychological stuff of life has changed. You don't know who you are anymore. You don't know where you fit in the world. So there's these two elements, both the biological of your body being in a highly stressed state, and then the psychology. And so it was just little things like when I was, say, for example, I wanted to renovate my kitchen because I had a little apartment. And I was just so anxious, like thinking, what if this doesn't work? What if that doesn't work? What if the tradesperson says this? And I couldn't sleep like at night thinking about it. And or like if I parked my car on the road, I'd be like, oh my gosh, someone's going to hit it. And then I'm going to have to pay for it. And I don't have the money because I wasn't working. And it would just snowball. So it was just like everything, you know, or bigger things like, am I going to meet someone? Can I have a family? Because I was pretty young, like I was in my 20s when I first got sick. And will I be able to travel, or is my life just going to be stuck at home? And so it was a whole gamut of like big life sort of philosophical anxieties right down to like, what happens if I park my car on the road, right? So it was just everything. So exhausting, not great for trying to recover from an illness either. So, yeah.
Yeah, I was going to say, so you're already feeling exhausted from the physical. And then on top of that, you've put another layer. And I know what it's like not to be able to turn that voice off in the head, especially when you're tired and you go to bed. So how did that affect your everyday life in regards to your relationships and work and everything that you were going through?
Well, I wasn't working at the time. I was writing freelance where I could. Now, the caveat there was that it would take me a year to write a 2,000-word article. That takes me 2 weeks now, but it would take me a year because I'd have these 15-minute blocks whenever I felt well enough from my bed to type away or read some research about something. But that gave me purpose, so it was super important to me. But I was doing stuff, but it was slow. But I think the anxiety, it almost became its own full-time job. So when I was seeing like the psychologist, I started reading some incredible books by neuroscientists that look at how to deal with anxiety. It was a whole new world for me. And so I was sort of like trying to practice some of the strategies around mindfulness. I started meditating, something I hadn't really done much before. Went out to the ocean because I was lucky to be living near Cronulla Beach at the time. So my days were sort of quite involved with just trying to keep on top of health stuff and keep my mental health as strong as I could. And the other thing as well that happened, I think it was about a year into it, my dad suddenly passed away. It was very unexpected. And so that was like another level of grief and loss, but also life can change at any minute. So that anxiety again of like everything can just disappear, like things that matter to you and that you care about. So, it was a mixture of doing some of these activities, trying to get more in my body. I started yoga as well at that time. And in terms of the writing, I started incorporating the things I was going through and learning into my articles. And so that was, yeah, I guess that's what my days look like. But sleeping was difficult. You know, in the early days, I took some sleeping tablets, which helped so much, just because you lose your mind when you you can't sleep for long periods of time. And any you know, mum of a newborn would know that. But it's so interesting. As soon as the light goes out and the darkness comes in, it's so, like, they've done studies around why we ruminate at night. I can't remember all of it now, but it's a thing. Like, we actually struggle at night. And as soon as you turn the light on, you know. So it was just, it was an intense time of my life trying to keep on track with everything. But my family was really supportive. And so that was, I just don't know. Like, I have friends who ended up homeless actually after getting sick because they didn't have places to go. Like, had I not been able to go back and live with my mom, you know, you're very vulnerable. And so I had a lot of support, and I'll always be very grateful for that. And I ended up getting the disability pension from the government. So also really grateful for that too.
Yeah. And that must have been a really hard thing, from going from being a really productive, you know, person in your personal life and in your work life, to suddenly having to rely on other people.
Oh, it was so difficult. And, you know, there were comments made, you know, a few times when I went into Centrelink. Because these illnesses are invisible, it's really hard for people to get their head around. And sometimes empathy isn't like their strong suit, like some people, just in life. And I had comments, you know, like, why don't you want to work? You look fine.
Mm.
And I just graduated with first class honours from uni, just got into the government graduate program, which is very competitive. And to be told things like that is such a such a challenge, because you're like, this is not me. And when I moved to Canberra and I got sick quite early, everyone I met didn't know me before. And that was really hard, because they just thought, oh, you're being lazy, or you're just making a big deal, like, or it's, you know, I'm like, if you knew me before. But I've come to find that it's quite common amongst that sort of high achieving, busy mind women in particular. So yeah, super difficult. And trying to ask that question, like, who am I? What's my value when I can't achieve these things? Because our culture certainly doesn't foster this sense of worth outside of productivity. So, yeah, it was hard.
And it's, I'm really sad to hear that you went through that, because it's very easy to judge, isn't it? You know, like that was a huge breakthrough for me, is to really stand in other people's shoes, because it's really easy to judge. As you say, it's like an invisible illness. And there's a lot of other, I've got a friend who's got MS.
Mm.
It's very similar. You know, people look at you, you look fine. You know, what's your problem?
Yeah.
You know, you're being lazy or whatever. And it's so harsh, because they have no idea what you're going through. So I think to understand that and to be more compassionate towards people, I mean, I even do it when I go into the supermarket. We've got a lady, I don't know if you can hear my dogs having a drink there in the background, because this is real life. There's a lady in our supermarket, one of the checkout ladies, probably about my age. She's really grumpy. And every time we go, my husband goes, oh God, I hope we don't get her. But the other day I stopped and I said to her how much I appreciated her, and she turned to me and said, well, I'm glad someone does.
Oh gosh.
And it just made me think how we have no idea what is going on in people's lives. You know, she was grateful for that. It wasn't a big thing for me. But how quick we can judge people, and how detrimental that can be for that person. Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't think we have any idea what people are going through and how much effort it can take to try and present as normal and functional and okay, you know, like with your friend with MS. And even in my case, if people see you out, they're seeing you on your good day. You know, I've been so tempted on my own social media to take photos of what I look like in bed on a day when I'm struggling. It doesn't look like this, you know, just to offset that for people to understand. But I think I've also come to appreciate a lot of people find it difficult to be empathetic until they've experienced it themselves or experienced something similar or someone close to them. There's other people who are naturally empathetic who don't find it difficult to put themselves in other people's shoes. But I think it's not the norm, I think, I've realized. I've been very fortunate in my life to be surrounded by people who are very naturally empathetic. But as I've gotten older and experienced different people and different, you know, the world as a bigger place, I'm like, actually, this is not the norm, you know. And so I try, you know, to sort of think, okay, everyone's got their own journey, you know, and you just don't know. Like when my dad passed away, I very remember when I was heading to the funeral parlor one day and this person took my car spot. Oh my gosh, I was furious. And I don't really do road rage, but I was just so, like, so angry. And I realized in hindsight, it really wasn't about the spot. I just felt so, like, out of control and so upset. And it gave me an awareness that you just, like, that person who, like, beeping their horn at you, you don't know what they're going through. And, you know, I often say to my husband when we're around hospitals, like, just drive extra careful, because you don't know, that person walking out of that hospital might have just lost someone or is going through something, and they're not in their best place, you know. And I think the more we can bring that attitude everywhere, I think it's helpful to assume that people have got stuff going on, because honestly, most of us do in some shape or another.
Oh, it's so beautiful, Jess. It's so true. And maybe someone listening to this today, you know, when they go out and get cranky about something, might just go, well, you know, you don't know, that person might have a sick child at home and they have to come to work and they're worried, or,
yeah,
you know, we really truly don't know. So it's really a valuable exercise to do.
Mm. Yeah.
So I'd love to touch a little bit about your writing. And you mentioned that you write for Wellbeing Magazine. And I'd love you just to share, what are the sort of topics and how can we harness the power of our brain to really support ourselves in our wellness journey and in life?
Yeah, so the very first article I wrote was at the very back of their magazine, called Real Life Experiences, and people write about their stories. And I thought, oh, that's perfect, you know. And that, so I wrote about the power of acceptance, because I'd worked out early in my illness that the longer that you sort of resist something, the harder it is to heal from it. And having an illness that didn't have a cure or even a treatment plan was really hard. I spent $10,000 in the first year trying to find something. And then one day I just went, I've got to accept this is in my life and make the best of it. And then things started to slowly improve, which, interestingly, when I think about that now, is very much connected to the stress response and what hormones are floating through your body. Because the more we resist something, and every time I went to appointments, I had to relive all the symptoms and everything again. And it floods your body with stress hormones, you know, adrenaline and cortisol. And over time, it becomes very inflammatory in your body. And so I started with this article on the power of acceptance and then started to pitch feature articles. And so, you know, I've written about so many different things, from like goal setting, but from a kinder point of view, where we're being driven by purpose, not necessarily a result. Purely because I'd set goals and couldn't reach them as I was recovering. And I was like, how do I still be, you know, have passions and purpose and ambition, but not drive to burnout in order to actually reach that goal, because that's what I used to do. You know, I've looked at the importance of sleep, how to manage the fear response so we can get out of our comfort zone, which was very much connected into my experience with anxiety. How to work smarter, not harder. That was a big one for me. I thought, I just can't sit at a desk for, you know, 8 to 10 hours like, you know, a normal person might. So how do I still get things done. What's the neuroscience around what our brain needs to actually work at its best? And discovered that it actually is about focus and not doing everything all at once, no multitasking, taking breaks. All the stuff that I was doing because of my health is actually backed up by science that we all should be doing. So that was wildly exciting for me that my lifestyle was actually being supported by the studies of what we need as a human. So anything around, you know, how we can also be kinder to ourselves, because I've got a background very much in perfectionism and being quite a hard taskmaster. And I used to love it when I was younger because it really sort of drove achievement. But as I've gotten older and as health issues have come and gone and come back again and all that sort of stuff, you just sort of realize that it's not a healthy way to live. Again, coming back to how stress then gets increased in our body when we're being hard on ourselves. So looking at what self-kindness can do for us, and there's lots of beautiful research out there around the power of self-compassion. And again, it comes back to that it equips us better, because we have, you know, some of our happy hormones in our brain. We're focusing on the good things. We're not focusing on what we didn't do, what we can't do, or the scarcity. Because that was a big factor in my journey, was that with health, is that when you can't do things, it's tempting to focus on what we can't do and get stuck in that. But we have to focus on what we do have and how we can use that. And I think that's true of everybody, whether it's an illness or not. Everybody has limitations. Everybody. Don't have to be health. It could be time, money, family, anything, you know. So that choice to switch our mindset over to a ability, not disability, or abundance, not scarcity, has a huge impact, you know, which also ties into gratitude and the power of gratitude. Like I found, you know, we talk about gratitude a lot in the wellness space. For me, gratitude is so much more powerful when you're going through tough times than it is just as an everyday like strategy for happiness. Because when you're going through tough times, you do become quite hyper-fixated on the things that aren't working. And gratitude is that like circuit breaker to lift up and out of it. So I just, I write about mental health, mental wellness, work practices and productivity, creativity, body awareness, getting into your body, not your busy brain. All the things that I've struggled with and have had to learn. And I often pitch articles that I want to learn more about. And I use that as a chance to grow. So many fascinating topics.
And I love that we're very similar. When you learn something, the first thing you think of is, I want to share it, and who can I help by what I've experienced? Yeah. And it's just such a beautiful trait that you have. And you're writing a book. Now, I know
I am
about this, and you said it's been taking you a while, but you recently, well, I'm not quite sure how long ago, became unwell again, and you told me that actually in a way helped you with the book. So yeah, share a little bit about what your book is about.
So I've been writing for, I think it's about 12 years now, and I've always wanted to write a book, but it's been like a bit of a passion project because it takes a long time and there's always other things like kids and, you know, earning money and things like that, you know, take priority. But I always just said I want to bring all my knowledge into one place, so it's not just scattered bits. So that's a bit more like a holistic guide for people. But I really struggled to work out what my core message was. So having a core message in a 2,000-word article is relatively easy, at least for me now. But to look at all of those topics and say, what is the message, was actually really quite challenging for me. So I kept writing, but I didn't have that focus, that umbrella for everything to hang on. So it was a little tricky. I also realized I was writing about three books, so I've sort of separated out things. So that's why it's taken me a while. But it was this time last year I got COVID, and I felt like I did okay with it, but then I got two more viruses after it and my health really started to become a problem again, and I was working part-time in the corporate world, which I hadn't done before. So it was like quite a lot of demands on me. And there was, you know, some issues in that particular workplace that increased sort of stress and frustration and pressure and things like that. So it wasn't a great space at the time. And I got increasingly sicker with all the symptoms that I'd had with chronic fatigue syndrome, but also joint pain, which I hadn't had, to the point where I had to resign after about 6 months. And it was devastating, you know, it was so devastating because getting this job was meant to be like a new chapter because I'd been really well for quite a long time. And the best way to describe it is like playing snakes and ladders, and you're almost up at 100. You think you've got things sorted, and then that big snake takes you back down to about 1. And that's what it felt like. I just thought it was so hard getting my head around. But what it did do was reminded me of the importance of being kind to ourselves and our body. Because being in the corporate space sort of reminded me how much we have to push beyond sometimes what we feel we can, that it can become a problem, and how we get tied up in feeling responsible and not wanting to let people down, which is a huge one for me. So it just reminded me again of what it was like being sick. Because originally I wrote the book as I was sick. This is my journey of recovery. It was sort of nice and neat, but now I'm still in the thick of the recovery of this second bout. It's been good because it's made me go back into the rawness of how challenging things have been. This time round's been like harder because I've got a child and I'm married and I'm older and I've been through it before and I know it's quite challenging. So I've had to dig a lot deeper. So it's made the writing more real and raw. There's a lot more grey in it. But so the book is called at this stage Wired to Thrive, and it's looking at how we can rewire our brain to think, feel, and work better by being kinder to ourselves and our body. Because I'm on a mission to try and change our mindset around what it looks like to be productive, to achieve, and to live well. Because our culture is very much in that hustle mindset that we override our body's messages. We push through, we stay at our desk until we get it done. We try to multitask, we don't put boundaries, we say yes to everything, but that just really leads to burnout and it leads to increased stress, which creates a whole gamut of issues. And so the book is about looking at really what does our brain and body need to thrive and how do we incorporate that practically into our life through the way that we work, through practical strategies, through the way that we think. You know, there's a lot of this mindset reframing, and I call them anchor statements, like little mantras we say to ourselves to just reground ourselves. So important. But mostly that shift that we actually do believe that this is possible, that we can live a gentler, slower kind of life and still achieve the things that matter to us. So the three core parts of my book, the first one's around purpose. So looking at a value-led life and doing the things that matter to us. So unfortunately, I think we spend a lot of time doing the things we should be doing rather than sometimes the things we feel called to or that really light us up. And there's so much healing in that. Second part is on pacing, like how do we achieve without burning out? And the last is on potential. So how do we grow and sort of shift our mindset? Because something I've noticed a lot is that we hold ourselves back a lot through our own mindset and those beliefs that we're not good enough or we need everything before we get started. It's super common and I struggle with it. I still do, you know, it's an ongoing thing. Stuff like perfectionism, procrastination. I have a beautiful chapter on owning our power story, which is about where have you come from to be who you are and why that's a good thing, instead of looking at what we don't have again. So, yeah, my hope is that it'll just be this beautiful guide for people to think differently and to approach life differently so that they're supporting themselves better. And about sustainable success, you know, we can achieve anything if we grind ourselves into the ground, but we're no good for then, you know, keep going. So yeah, so that's what it's about.
It just sounds amazing. And I know it's going to help a lot of people. And I love what you talked about the you know, doubting ourselves, questioning ourselves. It doesn't matter how much self-work we do.
Yeah.
I've found a really common thread amongst a lot of people, successful people, people that are trying to achieve things, is that unless and until you address that core issue of not feeling deserving or good enough or whatever it is for you, that you won't reach what you want. And so, it just sounds amazing. And when you do get it published, we will share it.
Thank you.
That's what I'm all about. And I'm just so grateful for you. You've been so real and vulnerable in sharing. And that's a gift to people, because when other people hear your story, they're not going to feel as alone. They're going to feel that there's hope. And you're a beautiful example of that. I know you're still recovering, and that, you know, things aren't exactly as you want at the moment, but I know you've just got so much courage and strength, and I really admire you. So thank you for sharing all of that with us.
Thank you. Thank you for creating that space too. I think it's important. It can be scary being vulnerable, and, you know, writing my book is definitely bringing that up, having so many stories in one place. Where people learn so much about you. But
oh, yes, I know about that one.
Yeah, you would.
I don't know
you
if you've read mine yet. Yeah, there's no hiding in what I've written. So
it's a huge act of courage and bravery, but I'm sure you're the same. The books that I've read that have really changed my life, and I've read multiple times, they're always when people are brave enough to go to that space of like unveiling the curtain a bit. And I think that's the power of humanity when we can. Power of story, power of vulnerability, and Brené Brown's work. I'm just thinking of her, like, you know, it is so powerful, but it's not easy. You know, it's not easy to lay bare some of these things, you know, but for me and like you, you know, I think when you think this could help someone, that's enough for you to want to do it. Because it's a horrible feeling thinking you're alone or the only one out there, or you're just having one of those days. So, you know, I don't want people to feel like that if I can help. And I also think we go through these difficult times in order to help. And that helps us to be more resilient when we put purpose and meaning over a difficult situation, or else you go under, don't you? In all honesty.
Yeah. Oh, that's so beautiful. And now I'm going to ask you the questions. I know you were really nervous about this.
Just anything about pop culture, I'm a bit hopeless.
No. This is all about personal preferences. So okay. That's fine. So I'm going to ask it because we're going to have some fun, because, you know, we talked about some heavy stuff and now it's time for fun. Yeah. And you know I'm that person. So I'm going to ask you some questions, and you wanted me to send them to you beforehand. I went, no, I'm not going to do that. I'll be kind, I promise.
Okay.
So, beautiful Jess, what is your favourite word?
Oh, that's a good question. I've never been asked that. Favorite word. Hope is the word that comes to mind.
Oprah?
Hope. No, not Oprah. Hope.
Oh, Lord.
I'm going Oprah's to awesome too, but hope.
No, I prefer hope than Oprah. Oh, I'm sorry. If you could travel anywhere in the world, where would you love to go?
Japan in the cherry blossom season. Very specific.
No, well, my daughter went there and she just loved, she said she could actually live over there. She loves it so much.
Yeah, it would just be very special.
When you were a little girl growing up, what did you want to be? What was the career that you wanted to have when you were little?
When I was really little, I wanted to be a vet. And then I realized I wasn't so great with blood and stuff like that.
Let it help.
And then I did a lot of public speaking and debating as a kid. So I wondered if a speaking career or a lawyer, something like that. Or a psychologist.
I wanted to be a psychiatrist.
Yeah.
This is so weird saying this. And an architect.
Ooh.
Yeah, I know. Didn't do either.
That's cool.
I know. Favorite all-time movie?
Oh, The Imitation Game. I don't know if you've
heard
seen
of that one. Who's in that?
Oh, Benedict Cumberbatch.
Yeah, I know him. We'll just call him Ben.
Benny. Yeah, I loved that movie. I thought it was brilliant.
I need to check that one out. Secret Guilty Pleasure.
Oh, eating Nutella out of a jar. I may or may not have done that a lot in the last few months on the difficult days.
No judgment here.
Instant dopamine. Bing, bing.
Bit of sugar. Beautiful. If you could go out for coffee with anyone, past or present, and sit down and have a chat with them, who would that be?
I recently watched a doco on Ed Sheeran, and I was so fascinated by him. So he would be up there. And actually, Ando's another one who I'm very fascinated by. So can I have two? Do you reckon Ed and Arne would like?
Oh, you can do whatever you want. I want to interview Ando. I love Ando. Yep. Oh, my gosh. I love that. See, we're connected already. And finally, what are you most proud of in your life so far? Your proudest achievement?
Proudest achievement. It's probably a mixture of the writing I've done, because people often reach out and say how helpful that's been. And it's also my son. I know that's very stereotypical, but for a long time, I didn't know if I'd be healthy enough to have a child. He's sort of like my biggest achievement on a lot of different levels. And as he gets older and I see how we can shape them, I think the whole nature nurture debate's fascinating. It's a lot more nature than I thought, but to try and raise a good human is something to be proud of.
Beautiful. And he is.
Yeah.
He is. We know that. I'm just so grateful to talk to you today. And I just think you're absolutely beautiful. And I hope that you continue to feel better and stronger. And I'd love to share how people can get in contact with you if they'd like to reach out, which I will do. And share your writing, because it is exquisite and it is helpful. And please promise me when that book comes out that you'll let me talk to you again.
Oh, that would be so wonderful. Yeah, I'd love that. I can't wait for it to get there. It's still a little while off. We're in just editing phase, but it'll get there.
No, I believe in you.
Big job.
Thank you so much, Jess. I really appreciate having you here today.
Oh, thank you so much for having me and for such an interesting conversation today too.
So thank you, everyone. That's our episode for today. And I will share some information that if you would like to reach out to Jess or connect with some of her writing, that you can do. And I look forward to seeing you next time on the Untangling podcast. Bye for now. Thank you so much for joining me today on the Untangling series podcast. I feel absolutely blessed to be on this journey with you. If you would like more details on where to purchase my book, The Untangling, I've popped the link in the notes below. Perhaps you may feel called to work with me one-on-one to support you in your own untangling. I would love that. I offer my services as a coach to walk you through this process in a unique bespoke program created solely for you, because you are unique. Another one of my passions is offering my services as a keynote speaker. I do like engaging with others, as you can probably tell. If any of that is of interest to you, you can contact me directly by the links below, or head on over to my website at susiedejong.com.au, and I will get straight back to you, I promise. I love what I do, and I know what my purpose is: to pay it forward and help others untangle and find their own freedom and joy. So bye for now, and I look forward to seeing you next time.